Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Commonway Church. My name is Gus. I'm the college pastor here at Commonway. Thank you for being here. It's good to be together. I am actually pulling double duty this morning. I am doing announcements and giving the sermon. I assume a huge raise is in my future. I haven't talked it over with Jeremy yet, but I'm just assuming that. No, really, just because there's one very quick announcement this week, and that's it, and then we're going to hop right in. The big announcement is here in a few weeks on July 12th, we'll be having our first in-person service back at the Commonway building together on Sunday morning. So July 12th, Sunday morning, we'll be back together. Service times are going to be a tiny bit different just to leave room for people to get in and out without crossing paths too much. So service times are going to be at 9 and 11 a.m. Really, only other super important information we're going to get into this morning is kids and youth activities are going to resume on August 2nd. So here in a few weeks, Sunday morning, we'll be back up and running, but not Commonway Kids and Commonway Youth on Sunday. So that's all the announcements we've got for this morning, and we're going to jump in to our last week in our series, Leading Like Jesus. This is the last week before we move on, and I kind of thought it'd be nice to end the series with a super, super practical, really easy to apply tool rather than some, 10,000 feet in the sky idea. So this morning I'm going to be sharing really just one little tool that I have used in leadership for years and years now, and I am stealing almost entirely from one of my very favorite books called Strong and Weak by Andy Crouch. One of my absolute favorite and most influential books that I've read, Strong and Weak, can't recommend it enough. And all we'll be doing this morning is I'm basically doing a book report with a little bit of editorializing on this book, Strong and Weak. There's a great leadership tool in here. Quick little disclaimer, some of you, if you're in the college ministry or in the youth ministry or if you're a volunteer, you may have heard me give a very similar talk before. And I that's only because I use this tool so frequently and I believe in it so much. So if you're going, oh my gosh, we're going to do the strong and weak thing again, stick with me. One, because it's okay to hear it twice. It's worth it. And two, there's going to be some new stuff this morning. So, strong and weak. So Andy Crouch, the author of this book, jumps in with sort of introducing this idea that we often think in terms of, either or rather than both and. And sometimes that can be damaging to us that, we think, for example, he uses this example as parents, you have to either be warm, sort of a warm, affectionate parent, or kind of an authoritative, stickler for the rules parent, and you just kind of have to place yourself on that spectrum of where you're going to fall. And of course, the answer is you can actually probably be both of those things. And what Andy Crouch, he goes down the path of, as followers of Jesus, as believers, it can be easy to kind of put ourselves in this pickle where we start to think, am I, as a follower of Jesus, supposed to be this sort of humble, submissive servant who just defers to everybody out there in the world in a way almost weak? Or am I supposed to be this, strong, mighty, glorious follower of Jesus who is kind of a tank to the world? I affect things around here because I'm a follower of Jesus. And sometimes you can kind of feel like, well, which do I do here? And of course, the answer is we actually do both, hence the title of the book, Strong and Weak. That as followers of Jesus, we are both of those things. And particularly as we learn to lead like Jesus, we're not just some commanding figure, but we are also this compassionate, warm figure as we lead like Jesus. We're both strong and weak. Now, he beefs up the vocabulary a little bit, and we're going to do that as well this morning, because strong and weak kind of have some connotations and they're not quite robust enough. We're actually going to use the language vulnerability and authority. You can see it there on the screen, vulnerability and authority. That a mix of those two, rather than having to choose between those two, is what makes a good leader. And so we move from a spectrum, like a line spectrum, like you see there, we move from that into a 2x2 graph. We're going back to geometry class here. A 2x2 graph, which you can see there, with authority on the y-axis and vulnerability there on the x-axis. And where we want to be as followers of Jesus, as people leading like Jesus, is in a place where we have high authority and high vulnerability up in this quadrant. Now, before we go any further, we're going to define those terms for the sake of our discussion, for the sake of our learning, because, you know, authority might mean a million different things to a million different people, and vulnerability the same way. So Crouch defines authority as capacity for meaningful action. We're going to pause just for a second there, because there's a few things worth pointing out. One is that he uses the word meaningful, capacity for meaningful action. You know, an infant, a newborn, can do a lot of action, can do lots of things, but they're not necessarily meaningful actions. You know, you can cry and go to the bathroom and eat and crawl around, but that's not really meaning-making, authority-creating action. So capacity for meaningful action. We're also notably not defining authority as, you know, a position or a title that you're given. It's not part of a company structure you climb up. You know, if you're a middle schooler or a high schooler out there, you might think, well, what authority do I have? I don't have some luxurious job title. But you do have the capacity for meaningful action. So if you're young, old, retired, and, you know, bottom of the totem pole at your job, top of the totem pole at your job, you have capacity for meaningful action. So that's what we're using as authority. And vulnerability is defined this morning as exposure to meaningful risk. So again, a meaningful word there is meaningful. Exposure to meaningful risk. Not that we're just flippantly exposing ourselves to, you know, this isn't a teenager going 120 miles an hour down a country road. That's not the kind of vulnerability. That's not meaningful risk. That's not the vulnerability we're talking about. This is kind of that Brené Brown flavor of vulnerability. So, authority, capacity for meaningful action, vulnerability, exposure to meaningful risk. With those definitions in mind, we are now going to just visit each quadrant of the graph that we've got going on, starting with the quadrant that is high authority and high vulnerability, which Crouch labels as flourishing. So by the graph's definition, by our tool that we're using today, you know, a flourishing human being is one who exhibits and exercises high authority, you know, takes advantage of that capacity for meaningful action, but also exposes themselves to meaningful risk, high authority, high vulnerability. Who does that sound like, who we might be talking about? Who sounds like someone in our life who exhibits high authority and high vulnerability? Of course, Jesus is the ultimate example of this flourishing human being who exercises both of these things together and is just the ultimate example of both of these things. You know, one of my favorite little verses in the Bible, it's just a quick little snippet, comes actually right after Jesus's Sermon on the Mount, right after Jesus's teaching, and we get this reaction that the crowd has to him, almost like, you know, you learn what it would have felt like to be in the room with Jesus after he's preaching. And Matthew 7, verse 28 reads, "When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teachings, because he taught as one who had authority, and not as their teachers of the law." So apparently, if you went and just heard Jesus speak, just heard him talk, you'd be struck by his authority. You would go, man, that guy, he means it. And I think he is in charge. That guy has authority. And then, of course, in Jesus' actions, we're using that term capacity for meaningful action, Jesus seemingly never missed a chance to take meaningful action. So many instances in the Gospels, we see Jesus headed somewhere, on his way somewhere, but he stops to help someone. He stops to take meaningful action, almost as if he couldn't help himself. He absolutely exercised this authority. But of course, who more than Jesus exercised vulnerability and exposure to meaningful risk? You know, not just coming and living a humble life, you know, being born in a stable in a manger to, you know, the son of a carpenter, just very, very humble life, not as royalty right off the bat or anything like that, but also just traveling with fishermen, moving around from home to home, not esteeming himself as some kind of new world political power, but exposing himself to risk to the point that he, you know, people thought this was going to be the end of his life, that he died on the cross because he was that willing to be vulnerable and to take on pain. Paul captures this mixing of Jesus' authority and vulnerability so well in Philippians 2, verses 6 through 8. Let's read together and just hear this mixing of authority and vulnerability. Paul's writing about Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So right there, we see that mix, being in very nature God, but then ending with obedience to death, even death on a cross, that authority and vulnerability. And in Jesus' teaching, you can't avoid this paradox, seeming paradox, that Jesus says, actually, no, this is the way to be both strong and weak, to be both authoritative and vulnerable. Matthew 16, 25, one of the most famous and easy to remember, hard to actually get a grip on and live your life this way. Matthew 16, 25, "For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it." We see again just that smashing together of authority and vulnerability. Now, I know for me sometimes it's easy to go like, okay, great, Jesus did that, but I mean, I'm not going to be able to hit that standard. Am I ever going to make it to this authority quadrant? Is this, you know, I don't know that I can do what Jesus did exactly. Well, I think actually we are able to reach this flourishing quadrant maybe more often than you might think. You know, for example, some things that do fall under this criteria for flourishing. If you open a business, if you're an entrepreneur, you know that's you exercising capacity for meaningful action. That's, you know, a great, you know, exercise of your authority. But also, you're exposing yourself to meaningful risk. You're taking some real risk there. You might be hurt. You're vulnerable. But that's a way to flourish. That's a good thing. you know, of course, any romantic relationship in the early stages, if you're asking somebody out on a date or early in that relationship, there's authority there. You've asked someone out, you're taking them on a date, you've told them how you feel, that's great. But also, you're exposed to risk. You feel vulnerable. You might get hurt. You might get crushed. And that's a flourishing thing. Our relationships are an example of us flourishing. I think our relationship in particular, a great example of that is our relationship with Jesus, learning to lead like Jesus, where I am taking authority. I am deciding to live this way. I'm deciding to follow Jesus in this direction. I'm going to worship. I'm going to be a follower of Jesus. A great exercising of our authority. But also, I might be risking my 5-year plan, or I might be risking what I used to think was important. That might be gone now. Jesus might rearrange that. Me following Christ might mean I'm vulnerable to being changed. And that's a good flourishing thing for us to do. Lots and lots and lots of examples. Just wanted to point out, this is not some unreachable quadrant. We actually can do that. So we're going to move to our second quadrant, the one right below flourishing. And we're going to keep moving through those. But that second quadrant is high vulnerability. So you're exposed to risk, but low authority. And Crouch labels this quadrant suffering, the quadrant of suffering. You know, an extreme example of this, where you're exposed to risk, but not able to do a ton of about it. You know, extreme examples would be, you know, things like racism or sexism, being on the receiving end of that, where, you know, I'm vulnerable because of the color of my skin or because of who I am to people treating me terribly. And there's not, you know, not a lot I can change about that. I might be in suffering in that regard. Another, you know, the most extreme examples would be, you know, losing a loved one, the feeling of grief, that finality of I cannot take meaningful action against this loss that I've experienced. But I'm certainly vulnerable. I certainly feel it. And we can call that feeling suffering. Or, you know, what's interesting about this quadrant, one of the things worth pointing out is that suffering is the quadrant that we all try to avoid. Universally, we want to avoid suffering and try to run away from it as hard as we can. But what is ironic is it's the one quadrant that we will all definitely visit at some point in our life. I might not flourish. I might not visit the other ones we're going to get to. At some point, I am going to suffer. At some point, I'm going to get bad news from the doctor. I'm going to lose a loved one. Or certainly, at some point in my life, I'm really going to suffer when I pass away. I have no authority over that. That's coming down the pipe no matter what. And I'm going to be vulnerable to it. It's going to happen no matter what. So suffering is this thing that I think we become so afraid of. And so we're so risk averse in our culture that we forget it actually shares a side with flourishing in many ways. For example, Jesus, who, if anyone you would think had a pass to completely skip suffering and to exercise all authority and no vulnerability, no need for Jesus to suffer. He's perfect. He's God. He's the Messiah. He could surely get out of suffering. He didn't. Jesus did suffer. He suffered for us, and he didn't skip over suffering. And worth noting that in our risk aversion and our unwillingness to feel this discomfort, we often end up running away from what might be a path to flourishing. We're going to move on now to our third quadrant, which is high authority, low vulnerability, and which Andy Crouch labels the control quadrant. Now, I want to say a little something about us just moving over into that low end of vulnerability, crossing that authority line into the low end of the vulnerability line. You know, I think this control quadrant is the one that we most often confuse with flourishing because we live in such a risk-averse culture, and because vulnerability is a hard thing. I think it's a little bit harder for us in our culture to exercise vulnerability than it is authority. And so we sometimes forget what real flourishing looks like, and we confuse it with control, with high authority and low vulnerability. And I've got this little clip that I'd like to play that I heard years ago on the radio on This American Life, which is a radio program. I can't remember who the author is. I have no idea if this person's a believer or not. It almost sounds like possibly not. But I downloaded this file years ago, and it's always stuck with me as an illustration of how flourishing, of how following Jesus actually might expose us to risk. And I want us to sit in that for a little bit before we move on to these low vulnerability quadrants. So let's listen together.
Well, it all began at Christmas 2 years ago when my daughter was 4 years old. And it was the first time that she had ever asked about what did this holiday mean. And so I explained to her that this was celebrating the birth of Jesus. And she wanted to know more about that. And we went out and bought a kid's Bible and had these readings at night. She loved them, wanted to know everything about Jesus. So we read a lot about his birth and about his teaching. And she would ask constantly what that phrase was. And I would explain to her that it was, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And we would talk about those old words and what that all meant, you know. And then one day we were driving past a big church, and out front was an enormous crucifix. She said, "Who is that?" And I guess I'd never really told that part of the story. So I had this sort of, yeah, oh, well, that's Jesus. And I forgot to tell you the ending. Yeah, well, you know, he ran afoul of the Roman government. You know, this message that he had was so radical and unnerving to the prevailing authorities of the time that they had to kill him. They came to the conclusion that he would have to die. That message was too troublesome. It was about a month later after that Christmas. We'd gone through the whole story of what Christmas meant, and it was mid-January, and her preschool celebrates the same holidays as the local schools. So Martin Luther King Day was off, and so I knocked off work that day, and I decided we'd play, and I'd take her out to lunch. And we were sitting in there, and right on the table where we happened to plop down was the art section of the local newspaper. And there, big as life, was a huge drawing by like a 10-year-old kid in the local schools of Martin Luther King. And she said, "Who's that?" And I said, "Well, as it happens, that's Martin Luther King. And he's why you're not in school today. So we're celebrating his birthday. This is the day we celebrate his life." And she said, "So who was he?" I said, "Well, he was a preacher." And she looks up at me and goes, "For Jesus?" And I said, yeah, actually he was. But there was another thing that he was really famous for, which is that he had a message, you know. And you're trying to say this to a four-year-old. It's very, you know, this is the first time they ever hear anything. So you're just very careful about how you phrase everything. So I said, you know, well, yeah, he was a preacher, and he had a message. She said, "What was his message?" And I said, "Well, he said that you should treat everybody the same, no matter what they look like." And she thought about that for a minute. And she said, "Well, that's what Jesus said." And I said, "Yeah, I guess it is. You know, I never thought of it that way, but yeah, And that is sort of like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And she thought for a minute and looked up at me and said, did they kill him too?
What's so heartbreaking and evident about that clip that a kid points out so well, that a kid would see in a way an adult wouldn't, is that sometimes to flourish, sometimes to follow Jesus, actually might cost us something, that it actually might require us to be vulnerable. It might not look like all authority. It might not look like complete control. It actually might move us into a place where we can be, where we're exposed, where we're vulnerable, which is what's missing from this quadrant that we're in right now, which is control. High authority, low vulnerability. The extreme version of this would be, you know, a dictator, maybe like Kim Jong-un or someone like that, where absolute authority, can do whatever you want, no one is going to question your command, and you're not exposed to any risk whatsoever. That's, you know, the outlier in the control quadrant, and obviously you can go, yeah, that's not a good thing. There should be some more vulnerability there. What I think that can look like in our lives is just a life of a five-year plan that goes exactly according to plan, a life that is so neatly protected and laid out, mixed with good authority, mixed with action-taking steps, but never crossing over into the vulnerability zones. I think about the rich young ruler who approaches Jesus in Matthew 19, who comes up to Jesus and says, Jesus, what do I need to do to have eternal life? And Jesus basically says, follow the commandments. Follow the commandments. And he lists the commandments. And the rich young man says, I've done those things. I do that. So he's good. You know, in some ways, he's taken that meaningful action. So that's good. And Jesus hits him with the vulnerability. Jesus almost calls his bluff. Jesus says, okay, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and come follow me. And Matthew says the young man walked away sad because he was living in the control quadrant. The rules were followed, check, 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 but he wasn't quite ready to jump over into the vulnerability, which would have been actual flourishing. Actual flourishing. Probably my favorite passage from Strong and Weak is a passage Andy Crouch wrote on control, on this all authority, no vulnerability. And Andy Crouch actually used to be a college pastor at Harvard University. And so he actually is writing about college ministry here and settling into control. So I'm going to read Andy's words. If you settle down in this corner, even your ambitions will become carefully circumscribed, following well-marked paths to good compensation and social respectability. The slippery pull of ascent to an Ivy League education may be fiercely contested, but the competition is so fierce precisely because the prize is so predictable. A golden ticket career path that are carefully staked out in advance to maximize reward and minimize risk. If you look at life this way, there is nowhere so safe as Harvard Yard. If you aim for real flourishing, there is nowhere more dangerous. The greatest challenge of success is the freedom it gives you to opt out of real risk and real vulnerability. I just love that so much. This idea that a completely controlled life, it's easy to confuse for flourishing, but it's actually not. Now, our final quadrant is right below control there, and it is low vulnerability, low authority, and this is the withdrawal quadrant. Or I think if you, in a challenging way, this can also sometimes just look like safety. But the withdrawal quadrant is what Crouch calls it. Very low capacity for meaningful action, very low exposure to risk. Now, there are some situations, all of these quadrants, there are some situations where it's okay to hang out there for a little bit. I used the example of a newborn earlier. A newborn should hang out in the withdrawal quadrant. You don't really want a brand new baby to have a capacity for a lot of action. They don't have a capacity for a lot of action. And you don't really want them exposed to risk. You'd kind of like them to stay in withdrawal for a little bit. The example Crouch uses is the example of like a cruise ship, being on a cruise where, you know, not really doing any meaningful action on a cruise. You're eating shrimp all day and playing shuffleboard or whatever, which is fine, but not a lot of meaning making there. And you're also not exposed to a lot of risk. If you steer clear of icebergs, things are pretty much taken care of and you're fine. And that's good for an amount of time. That vacation's a good idea. But if you kind of spent your whole entire life in that quadrant, it would start to get kind of sad. You'd start to say there's, you know, a lot of wasted potential there. It's no way to live your entire life. My favorite biblical example of someone just sprinting into the withdrawal quadrant is our good friend Jonah, the prophet, who is supposed to have lots of authority, is supposed to exercise lots of meaningful action. He's a prophet, supposed to be doing big things, but he doesn't do it. He is very much so downplaying his authority. And God also asks him to do some pretty risky things, asks him to be pretty vulnerable. And Jonah sprints in the opposite direction and tries to run away and run away and run away, even when he's in the thick of it. Jonah just wants to go down below deck in a boat and fall asleep. He's withdrawing. And God just yanks him out of that because that's not flourishing. You might think it is. It might be so cozy and comfortable that you want to stay there, but it's not what actual flourishing is. If we look at any of our, I'm a huge fan of stories and literature and movies and using these stories as illustrations. If we look at any story, if the heroes, the protagonists, were just to say, I think I'll just stay home instead, it'd be a very short movie or a very short book. Nothing would happen. We wouldn't have our heroes to look up to. If Iron Man just stayed inside and thought, you know, I'm not going to put the suit on today and I don't want to be exposed to risk, we would have no Avengers. If the hobbits just stayed in the Shire, there'd still be dragons running around. We'd be in trouble. We need to come out of withdrawal. It's great for babies, it's great for a vacation, but it's nowhere near flourishing, and it's nowhere near leading like Jesus. So there you have a look at this tool, this kind of diagnostic graph that you can now use. I love this tool. I've got it above my desk at my office there in the church. Have used it for years and years and years. And there's a lot more nuance about, you know, how to move from one to the other. If you're in suffering, what do you do? All sorts of stuff that you can, you know, I recommend again the book if you want to look more into that. But for this morning, we're just going to ask a couple of questions to end our time using this graph, how we can use it to begin to lead like Jesus. So the first question is, you know, what is my response to my own brokenness? Meaning, when I'm not flourishing, when I start to really see a gap between where I am and where I want to be, what quadrant do I often find myself in? Do I tend to try to control the situation? Do I tend to suffer and not exercise authority? Do I kind of run away? Do I hide and withdraw? What is my response to my own brokenness? Where do I generally fall? I can tell you for myself, I tend to just sort of disappear and drift into withdrawal when I'm not flourishing. I kind of ghost myself almost, where I just sort of don't show up when I ought to. I don't take that authority in my life, nor do I expose myself to any kind of risk, which is really kind of a privilege that I'm afforded by the life that I live here in our culture. Second question is, what's an area in my life where I'd like to flourish? It can be as broad or as specific as you like. Finances, your marriage, eating habits, certain kind of devotional or spiritual discipline, you know, with your kids, at work, that kind of thing. Where would I like to flourish? Now find that category, and with that in mind, where am I at on the graph right now? Am I withdrawing, controlling, suffering? And how can I move to flourishing? It's helpful for me to, at times when I think, man, I really want to do better at that. I don't know why I'm not doing better. I can kind of place myself on the graph and go, oh, I really need to be taking more meaningful action. I feel exposed, I feel vulnerable, but I'm not actually taking much action. Or I might say, man, I'm working really hard, but I'm not actually taking any risks. I'm not being vulnerable at all. And it helps me know what ingredient I'm missing. And our last and maybe most important question as we wrap up this series of how do I lead like Jesus is, how can I move towards a more flourishing faith? You know, am I using my faith as an element for control? Am I using it as an avenue to just try to control my life, where I start to kind of fall into what you might call like a prosperity gospel, start using my Bible just to, you know, draw lines in the sand? Or am I suffering because, oh my goodness, I feel convicted. I feel like God is working on my heart, but I'm not following. I'm not taking meaningful action. How can I move towards a more flourishing faith? Or am I withdrawing? Am I not doing anything? Am I not paying any attention? Am I not feeling anything or doing anything? And how can I move towards a flourishing faith and to begin to lead like Jesus? Well, that wraps up all I had for this morning and our series. Join us next week as we start a new series. Thanks so much, and we'll see you then.